This is Mediation Station. The number to call us during the show is 416-785-0680. We present topics and guests to explore matters that take place in our daily lives. This is to provide you with options to make different decisions in a more informed manner. You can contact us at mediationstation@greggf@primus.ca and 647-227-4734. Welcome back, Leah. Thanks for doing the boards.
No problem.
Our topic tonight is called More on Self-Representatives in the Justice System. Our guest is Sue Rice, and she'll be calling in tonight to discuss the matters in more depth very shortly. The Family Information and Mediation Program is available at each of the Family Law Information Centers located at family courts throughout Ontario. Information is available regarding separation, divorce, related family law issues, family justice services, options that are going to court including mediation, local community resources, and court processes, along with the forms to use when dealing with family law matters. There is also an advice council available for people to access for free legal advice on family law issues. Information and referral coordinators are available to family courts to help you understand your needs and to make referrals to appropriate services in the family court system and in the community. They can give you information about family mediation and other options to deal with your matters, so you do not need to go to court or need to hire a lawyer. There are family information and mediation programs located at all three family courts in Toronto. The programs are called Mediate 393, located at 393 University Avenue, Mediate 311, located at 311 Jarvis Street, and Mediate 47, located at 47 Shepherd Avenue East. The office hours vary at each location from Monday to Friday. The best thing to do is to call for more information at 416-593-5393 or email info@mediate393.ca or visit the website at www.mediate393.ca. Our friends at the Toronto Resource Center for Peaceful Conflict Resolution welcome your visit at www.pcrtoronto.org. The website aims to promote values, ideas, and methods of nonviolent communication and peaceful conflict resolution worldwide, and to provide information about related resources available locally to Greater Toronto Area residents. The website also wishes to cover a wide spectrum of situations which could benefit from peaceful communication and conflict resolution skills, and looks to present thoughts of various cultures about the importance of peaceful coexistence. Again, the web address is www.pcrtoronto.org. Each Monday here at San Lorenzo at 22 Wenderley Drive, the hours of 5 to 7 p.m., we have the San Lorenzo Community Mediation Program. It's a free and confidential service. It's available for individuals to access. It's available for people in experiencing issues in relationships, whether in the family, with the neighborhood, workplace, or community. We coach you through a situation to find better ways to deal with matters. So for more information, you can contact me at either greggf@primus.ca or at 647-227-4734. Last week on our show, we had a couple of youth from the project Turning Things Around, and we'll do that again this coming month on March 23rd and then again in April. You know, the project is an opportunity for youth from the North Etobicoke and North York area, focused on the Somali, Caribbean, and South Asian communities, to get involved in a interactive and proactive opportunity combining social media and conflict resolution skills. So the project runs until the end of April. There's been a series of workshops. This past week we had another workshop, and it was on the topic of violence and safety. Before that was on identity and difference. Before that it was on change and conflict. But we have a couple more left. As well, I want to share about the Raffle of Hope here at San Lorenzo in support of projects of the Caravan of Hope, which is to have ambulances and I think also school buses sent to Latin America for communities that are underserved in terms of those resources. So the tickets for this are $10 each. They can be purchased here at San Lorenzo Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 22 Wenderley Drive, and you can have an opportunity of winning one of the five prizes: a 2013 Mazda car, a $2,000 cash prize, a $1,000 cash prize, a year's free maintenance on your vehicle, and the fifth prize is a 32-inch television set. The draw for the prize will take place, or prizes actually, will take place on June 22nd at the Inti-Raymi Festival, which is on the Saturday and Sunday, third week of June, at the festival that takes place every year. It's a major fundraiser for Voces Latinas. It's at Christie Pitt Park, just outside the Christie and Bloor subway line. Weekend of music, entertainment, and food, too. Also want to share about a couple of friends in Texas. First one here is Dave Hilton, who has a web television show, and it's called The Conflict Specialist Show, and he hosts somebody each week and puts it, uploads it there for people to access. It's related to conflict management, mediation, conflict coaching, negotiation, arbitration, ombudsman, etc. So you can access that at www.conflictshow.com. And the other individual, actually just a note too, that Dave will be a guest calling in from Texas on Mediation Station 2 weeks tonight on the 16th of March. And then the other individual is Patty Porter. And Patty is known as the Texas Conflict Coach. And she's accessible at www.conflictengagement.com/Texas Conflict Coach. So Patty Porter has a live blog on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Toronto time, 7 p.m. Texas time or Central Standard Time, at the web address of www.texasconflictcoach.com. So she's, she was on our show here on January 5th, and I'm going to be on her show on Tuesday, March 18th. So it'll be live in Toronto, 8 p.m. at the address of www.texasconflictcoach.com. Tonight, we're having someone call in. Our guest is Sue Rice, and it's on the topic of more on self-representatives in the justice system. And hopefully, she's called in. She's here. She's waiting. Okay, very good. Can you put her to air? Hi, Sue. Can you hear?
Yes, I can. Greg, how are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for calling in. Where are you?
I am in, just outside of Windsor, Ontario this evening. I just got back from Halifax.
I thought we'd have something more exotic. Oh, well.
I just bought a palm tree for my home office, so if that helps.
Okay, good. That's cool. That works, especially with the weather outside.
I needed a little something.
Yeah, I mean, it's just frigid here. Is it frigid down in Windsor?
It is, and being in southern Ontario, we are not used to this here. By now, we are ready to put our shorts on, so we're a little disgruntled in this part of the province.
You can put them on, but make sure you stay inside.
Good idea.
Yeah. So welcome to the program. I appreciate it. You're involved with a major research study in the justice system, so before we get into discussing that too much, let's have you share some information about yourself for us to better know you.
Certainly. Well, first of all, I want to thank you and your team and your listeners for sharing time this evening. I am a graduate of the University of Windsor in sociology, and I've been very fortunate in my life to work with very interesting projects in organizational development, social marketing, and public relations. And this has really helped to kind of be a melting pot of bringing things into the National Self-Represented Litigates Project in the position I do now.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the name of the research study that you're actually involved with is formally called
the National Self-Represented Litigate Study.
And when did it start, actually?
Well, the original research study started in 2011 and ran to just beginning of 2013. And that research project was the project initially started by Dr. Julie McFarland from the University of Windsor. And then it has now progressed into the National Self-Represented Litigates Project. And I can tell you a bit, you and your listeners, a bit more about that this evening.
Right. Okay. So what's your role how would you define your role?
Well, my role is officially as the project manager. So what I do as the research project, the first initial research portion of the project, I coordinated focus groups, arranged interviews for Dr. McFarland, did some follow-up pieces with the self-represented litigates who were being interviewed, did reviewing of data, a lot of the media. So that role has been carried into the project manager of the new project, as well as quite a few other additional pieces. So.
Right, and last year, actually, Dr. McFarland called in. Mm-hmm. I believe at that time she was in Colorado.
Yes.
And she called in to talk about the first year of the study. And I think at that time there had not been a decision. I don't even know if there was a conversation on whether you would continue the research study at that time?
Correct. And there wasn't, actually, when you had spoke with her. At that point, she was just finally putting together all of the data and getting ready to issue the final report of the research portion. When that was released, we also did a dialogue event where we took key players of the justice system from right across the country, predominantly the focus of province and the studies we did, but along with 15 self-represented litigants. And we had those people to the dialogue event in the University of Windsor. And because of that event, that just opened doors, those people continually to talk and wanting more research and resources. And that's where the beginning thought last year of this project came.
Okay. We're going to take a break, just so please hold on. Don't go away. You're listening to Mediation Station on CHHA, 1610 AM, Voces Latinas. Welcome back to Mediation Station. Our topic tonight is more on self-represented in the justice system with our guest, Sue Rice, who's calling in from Windsor, Ontario. And Sue, we were just referencing that Dr. Julie McFarlane, who is the lead on the study, was on last year talking about, at that time, what was to be the whole project, and then subsequent to that, a decision was made to further it, and you talked about there being a dialogue session, and from that, there was, I guess, a real sense of a need for something to be further developed or done with the stuff that you had done from the first year?
A need and desire, I think, on everyone's part.
Yeah. So, in terms of the first year of it, is there a way you can sort of capitalize what you did find, or what was, you know, some of the outcomes from that?
Certainly. So what had been done is Dr. McFarlane interviewed a total of 250 self-represented litigants, sorry, 259 self-represented litigants in Alberta, British Columbia, and Ontario. And those provinces were the ones chosen because the law foundations and the legal services societies from those provinces had funded the original research. So the 259 self-reps were interviewed. They called in. They did an hour to an hour and a half interview with Dr. McFarlane in person when possible, and if not by telephone. During that study, there was also an emerging trend of the importance of the frontline court staff. And so over 100 of those individuals were also interviewed.
Right.
And yeah, which was, you know, really interesting. And during those two interviews, you think you might get some different data coming out of it.
Right.
But ultimately, the data was the same. And what we heard overall from the study was people are not choosing to represent themselves by choice. They're not going in thinking, I'm, you know, better than anyone, I can do this, it's, you know, I want to do this. You know, there are a few in certain cases who can, but overall, overwhelmingly, it's not a choice. People are ending up representing themselves because they have become to a financial end. 53% of the study started off with a lawyer and could no longer afford one. So that, you know, was one of the first trends that we saw. The other few trends we saw were the impact. People were frustrated and traumatized by this. You know, we've come up with almost a post-traumatic syndrome from being in court. People become isolated. They don't know how to deal with the issue itself. And then the complexity of court, whether it be, you know, the legal ease language, which, you know, many of us who are non-lawyers find it very difficult to interpret, or just the strain on their life of the time commitment and trying to understand the rules of a game that they don't know how to play. We overwhelmingly saw that there was a loss in faith in the justice system, that people felt from both sides that there was a lack in compassion of caring from, you know, the powers that be. They felt that, you know, people don't care, which we found, especially with the court staff, they really do. People want to do a good job. And overall, most importantly, that it's a system problem. It's not the people. We saw with the system, it's been in place for so many years and hasn't really changed much. We need to think about how we educate and orient self-reps who are going into court.
Yeah.
But we also need to work with the legal services side, to whether it be working with lawyers, judges, court staff, to really do some collaboration together. That was pretty much the outcome of the study itself.
So when you talk about, I mean, there's two dimensions. There's the civil stream and there's the family stream, right?
Yes, we focused on civil and family. We didn't go into criminal in this study.
With regard to the civil, that includes small claims court and
yes.
any other level?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it does.
And did you find or did the data communicate any distinguishing features from one to the other? Or was unique to one?
We know, really, sometimes, occasionally, there was a time commitment that may have been a little bit shorter. Family cases, you know, can tend to reopen if it starts in divorce, and then, you know, child custody agreements can change, support agreements can change. So that can be a little bit, you know, a longer going process. But really, again, overall, people were frustrated and felt powerless and just were at their wit's end, you know, both mentally and financially. And that was across the board.
Right, whether going through the civil system or the family system, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I have more direct, I mean, I have some experience in the civil because I coach mediation over at Small Claims Court in Toronto, so I have an understanding there. And then I work in the family court system here, too. So I know the struggle that people can go through, and that's part of my role is to try to work frontline with people to assist. So when people communicated as clients or individuals as self-represented about their experiencing, what do you call it, unsympathetic or not sensitive understandings about things, did they have anything that they clearly identified as being the root of that for them?
Well, one of the interesting things, and I will just kind of touch base on why I was in Halifax, is we overwhelmingly heard from self-reps in the study that the courthouse staff were very, very helpful, the frontline staff. They, you know, one gentleman referred to them as angels on the counter. And, you know, we heard that overwhelmingly, but they also had, you know, a frustration with sometimes with the counter staff, because as counter staff, the line between legal information and legal advice is very, very tough to define at times. And, you know, people could recognize that, yes, they were being sympathetic, the court staff was being sympathetic to them, but they didn't understand why they couldn't tell them how to write an affidavit, what exactly to put in their affidavit.
Right.
So, for example, we just went and did a pilot project in Nova Scotia with the Department of Justice there, and working with court staff and training them on what the difference is between legal advice and legal information. And the court staff overwhelmingly felt incredible when they left, because they felt empowered that they could go and help people even more.
Right. I know that's something that people, you know, there's limitations, there's boundaries, and there's roles that are there. I mean, we have advice counsel and duty counsels who are through Legal Aid Ontario to help support people from the advice perspective if they're self-represented, right?
Yes, yes. And we again, overwhelmingly heard that many of the times people understood it was that people were trying to help. It was the system that was really the frustrating piece and that they couldn't understand.
Right, so in one level, people, I think, you know, they're going through their experiences, and okay, so yes, I can understand it's the system. At the same time, who cares? I'm still going through this struggle and this issue. How do I deal with it now?
And that, again, is overwhelming. It's imagine walking into, waking up one morning and being in a world where everything is different and you don't know the rules and you don't know how to play and you can't find, you know, especially in a family case, as an example, you're thinking, you know, you might be losing your children, your home. You put all of that pressure on and you wake up and you walk through this world and you're trying to navigate and negotiate with all of that stress. It's very hard that even when people are trying to help you, if they're not speaking the same language as you, you can't find that useful, and that often becomes more frustrating.
Let alone your earlier reference to legalese, when mother tongue or first language is English, and you still can't understand legalese.
Exactly.
Let alone for individuals whose mother tongue is another, other than English.
Oh, exactly. And that, you know, I mean, we're very lucky that we have such a melting pot country, and we have such diversity, but it does pose at times an issue when trying to obtain service from the legal system.
So the study is carried forward. Were there particular issues that were identified from first year that you were deliberately looking to address or seek to better understand in furthering?
Yeah, definitely. Some of the initiatives we were looking at actually became our mandate for the National Self-Represented Litigants Project. So those are research, resources, and dialogue and collaboration. We know there's much more research to be done. you know, this study touched, you know, the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
So, you know, we're always looking at partnering with different organizations. We're looking at working with Legal Aid Ontario right now on some projects and doing some research, and always, you know, in discussion with others on how we can do research, how we can obtain more information. You know, one of the things we have heard, and I'm not sure how internet savvy you are. I feel I'm fairly savvy, but when I was trying to look up for information on, you know, how to do things with court,
right,
it was very hard. Resources, you know, they're out there, but they're not always coordinated in the easiest way to find.
And one thing, too, about those things with forms. Mm-hmm. I know my experience when people would show up at the Family Law Information Center, and they'd have a form completed that's in the family stuff,
mm-hmm,
and we say, well, that's actually an old form. That's not,
mm-hmm,
the up-to-date form.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with the internet is that once it's there, it stays,
mm-hmm,
there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no reference on there to for individuals to know whether that's the actual current form or an older form, for example.
Right, and we heard that resounding in our research project as well. You know, people would be frustrated or the form line would shut down, and majority of the time people wanted to go and talk to a real person and have someone help them that way.
Yeah, we're going to take another break. Please stay with us. You're listening to Mediation Station on CHHA, 1610 AM, Voces Latinas. Welcome back to Mediation Station. Our topic tonight is called More on Self-Representatives in the Justice System with our guest, Sue Rice, who's patiently waiting, calling in from Windsor, Ontario, with her palm tree, I believe.
Yes, yes. The margaritas come later.
Yeah. Well, we just wanted to put the palm tree just to give people a sense that, you know, it's frigid cold here and give a little more warmth to the show.
Yes, you don't have to be jealous of people in southern Ontario. We're right there with you on their cold factor this evening.
I'm glad you're collaborating with us.
Yes, that's the key to success right there. I think you summed it up, Greg.
Yeah, right on. So we're talking about, you know, individuals as self-represented. How would you, just you, those two words, I mean, it's hyphenated, but how would you clearly define a self-represented person?
A self-represented person is going through the court system without hiring or the assistance of a lawyer.
Okay. Could they have started with one and then soon after they've ended that relationship?
Yes, they can. And, you know, what's interesting is 53% of the original research study showed that people did start with a lawyer. And court records differ in different provinces of when that time of being recorded, whether you have a lawyer or not, whether it's the start of your case or when you appear in court. So that's, you know, statistic is a little varied as well when you're looking at the overall court records. But currently, you know, at Shepherd and Jarvis, one of the numbers that comes out is 75% of people in family court,
yep,
are going without a lawyer. So,
yeah, and that's the court, those are the two courts in Toronto, courts of justice,
mm-hmm,
that are focused on child matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, divorce goes over at Superior Court at 393 in Toronto.
Yes.
And generally there's a little more, historically, more representation through counsel there with property and issues, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And just imagine, you know, when you're talking about those courts and the family and child issues, just alone that stress of having to go it alone in court, knowing what's at stake, the pressure these people are under.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm, in the morning it's all the you know, people filing their applications for custody, mm-hmm, or child support or access. In the afternoon it's just filled with child protection matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real, you know, sitting downstairs in the FLIC or the Family Law Information Center, mm-hmm, I just hear the different energy that goes from the morning to the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And people have a different kind of tension in the afternoon.
They definitely do. I've been, you know, honored to be able to be in so many courthouses in our country. And one of the things I do is I would always like to get there earlier before focus groups and just sit outside the courtrooms and watch. And I think that is an incredible way for people to see what is happening in our court system, is to just sit and observe. It's really that simple.
Yeah, just watch the interaction, the body language, mm-hmm, of people, mm-hmm, how they communicate with.
Yes.
Yep.
And the stress is just so evident. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of the first year, you're into the second year, which, mm-hmm, is this like a now no timeline on its ending?
Well, what it is, we are very fortunate that the University of Windsor Faculty of Law has funded the project to go forward for 2 years. So going forward again with that mandate of resources, research, dialogue, and collaboration, Dr. McFarlane and myself, and we have two research assistant students, as well as a few volunteer law students who are working with us to bring these mandates forward. So we have at least 2 years.
Two more years, okay. And so how would you say, relative to the first year, which was, I believe, strictly interviewing mm-hmm. individuals who are going through the system and also the court staff, mm-hmm. how is the distinction for, these next 2 years or further from that?
Mm-hmm. I think the really exciting thing, again, we did research and resources in the original study, and we really built on that. But the really exciting piece started when we did the dialogue event last May at the University of Windsor. And that is what's going forward. We're doing so much dialogue and collaboration. You were joking about my palm tree and collaborating, but that really is the key. And so many players across the board in the justice system are going with that right now. Chief Justice, Justice Thomas Cromwell has followed up with the Access to Civil and Family Justice Roadmap for Change based on Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin's initiative for access to justice for all Canadians.
Right.
Law societies across the country are taking on that. Legal aid boards. We actually do bi-monthly calls with heads of the legal aid boards, the law societies, where we talk and we work on sharing initiatives. Things such as the Nova Scotia Project, which I told you about earlier, working with legal advice versus legal information, has come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, really the next 2 years. It's exciting to sit down. Dr. McFarlane and I have been at various events, these roadshow events, getting to sit down with people and just really talk. It's not, the elephant in the room, access to justice, self-represented litigants, what are we going to do to get the justice system working so all Canadians can access it?
Right.
It's really an amazing topic of discussion, and that's our focus.
So really, like, if a person's listening tonight, the public mm-hmm. or anybody else, mm-hmm. why should this study be of any interest to them?
Well, there's a recent stat that came from the Law Society of Upper Canada that said 1 in 3 people will experience at least one legal problem in a given 3-year period in their life. That alone, is something, okay, that's going to affect me. At some point, I'm going to be in the legal system as a Canadian. It's going to affect how you access that system. As an individual, as a citizen, that could be your brother, your sister, your neighbor who's going through that system and you want to support them. As an employer, you may have an employee who's going through a divorce, who's missing time off work, not able to contribute to their best potential because, the stress that's going on in court. So this really is a huge issue for all Canadians that should be on top of their minds.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality is that the system per se doesn't do anything for you. The purpose, or not the purpose, but the process is driven by the parties. The individual has to keep doing something. So
mm-hmm.
I know a lot of experience interaction when I have conversation with people is, I never heard from the court. Will the court send me this? Will they mm-hmm. do this?
Mm-hmm.
What the reality is, the court does almost nothing like that.
And correct, some even almost say, well, they can't do something unless you tell them to do something. And that is interesting. And people don't know even the processes to begin.
Yeah.
And that's one of the issues, too, is, again, it's walking in there and, seeing a menu in a foreign language that you do not understand. How are you supposed to know what to order?
And even with the foreign language, that's one issue. It's many... Mm-hmm. Immigrants or newcomers come from a different kind of legal system or justice system where, ours is based on, except for Quebec, it's based on the common law from Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas many, let's say, Spanish-speaking countries, it's based mm-hmm. on the civil from France.
Right. So that alone, it would be confusing. It's, even across Canada, our systems are different in each province.
Yep.
During the original research study, I would have a post-it note on my bathroom mirror with the courts in BC, Alberta, and Ontario.
Yeah.
I could wear them every day because I would, my mind map wasn't quite connecting. And I was in it most of the time and seeing it. So when you're coming from a totally different background or, again, working with different languages, it would be very, very difficult.
Right. And then there's another thing that's called local practices mm-hmm. as well. I mean, there's rules mm-hmm. for civil procedure. There's rules mm-hmm. for family procedure.
Mm-hmm.
There's forms.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's practices that are, created by each court, unique to their circumstance. And then if one person has an experience in one court, you know, it's easy to make an assumption that going to another court would be the same practice.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a little bit of it's actually interesting. Dr. McFarland's blog coming out this week is focused right on this. And I'll give the information to your listeners at the end on how to find that. But it's very interesting is, you know, different rules on how things are interpreted and who interprets that. And that very much affects not just the self-represented litigants project, but also the people, you know, the court staff have to learn something different, maybe if they were transferred to a different area, or has so many layers to it.
Yeah, so I mean, if people who are trained, educated, like lawyers, for that kind of system and understanding, to be sophisticated to that level, the average individual, I believe can't be expected to know the same thing, because they wouldn't be exposed to all that education.
No, and that's what people, we, you know, we found in the study as well. People value lawyers. They value their service. They value that knowledge base. Sometimes, you know, that we throw around terms now in different language. Depending on the country, the U.S. calls it more of unbundling. Canada is looking at more as limited scope retainer. And, you know, people are finding that they want to negotiate through the system a little bit on their own, but then use the expertise of lawyers to maybe go into court with them or to check their forms, you know, to have someone with them on that process. And, you know, so who understands those local practices, as we were talking of, to kind of walk them through. So those are some interesting things the Canadian Bar Association is looking at, and different legal societies are starting to look at and have discussions about those things, too.
So in terms of to date, the civil and the family justice systems, have you seen any impact that you could correlate from the study, et cetera?
Well, again, the impact with Nova Scotia. We just did that study with the court staff, frontline staff, with legal advice versus legal information. We did a pre-survey to, you know, measure the level of satisfaction with users of the system, and then the post-survey will be done over the next few weeks to see, you know, what impact that pilot project made. Some of the other pieces, you know, directly we're looking at the University of Windsor right now is doing a coaching project with our law school, where we have law students being self-rep coaches. We've paired them with a self-rep, and they're going through, and again, can't give legal advice, but they can help them through the legal procedure. And that's something that's, you know, something that's really wonderful. The Windsor Court, you know, is aware of it, and these people can go into court with them. They can't give advice again, but as a support. So we're seeing, you know, those doors opening. The fact that, you know, the players in the justice system are sitting around the table talking to one another, and actually having self-represented litigants involved in those conversations. We have a wonderful self-represented litigant in Vancouver, BC, Jennifer Muller, who has been attending the Access to Justice Roadshow in Vancouver and is looking at sitting on tribunals and whatnot to give the voice of the people. So those changes, although, you know, some people might say, oh, that's two or three things, they are huge.
Right.
Getting into a system that we all need to work to change.
Right, and it's a very traditional system, and as you mentioned, it's been there for a long time.
Yes.
And change takes an infinite amount of time in order to happen, at least effective change does.
Yes, and we, as humans, we don't like change.
No, everyday lives.
Except for the weather, we want that to change, but no, it's tough. So these, you know, they may seem like small pieces, but it's that first pebble in the pond, and the ripples are coming out, and those ripples are getting bigger.
Right, and we have to, you know, confront these situations that we're not comfortable with, that we're seeking to hopefully create some positive change with, and, you know, agitate them so that, and have constructive conversations together, because you can't get change unless you put some tension on things. Otherwise, it's just the status quo, or in fact, it gets more reinforced with the current way it is.
Exactly. Change is always a little uncomfortable. Anyone in change management or anyone who's had to make changes in their life, and that's the fundamental simplicity of it. It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But people are willing to do it, and they're really coming to the table. And that is an exciting piece that I've seen in a difference in the time from starting the research portion of this project to now.
Okay, we're going to take another break, so please stay with us. You're listening to the Mediation Station on CHHA 1610 AM, Voces Latinas. Welcome back to Mediation Station. Our topic tonight is on more on self-representatives in the justice system with our guest, Sue Rice, calling in from Windsor, Ontario. And in terms of the work you've been done first year and into second year, etc., what types of challenges could you share that you've kind of faced?
Well, myself, I had said the post-it note on learning the different courts in each province.
Right.
Definitely was one. But, you know, I think what it is ultimately is everyone wants the system to work, which unifies us. But, you know, our country is so large, so diverse. There's different systems set up across the country. Different pieces have been set up at different times. You've got different bodies regulating the rules on many things. And, you know, it's not always been a culture of practice that is, you know, a very sharing and open culture. As lawyers, you're defending and protecting your client, right? So, you know, people, the stereotype of the lawyer can be adversarial. Not always true. But a system that's been built on those things can challenge you when you're trying to break down those silos.
Right.
And have everyone work together. But again, I think that this challenge is being addressed so well with so many of the initiatives of people getting together and doing roundtable discussions and really starting to share and collaborate together and say, hey, how does that work? Well, what, you know, what comes up? And, you know, I'll just go back to the Nova Scotia piece. Very simple. Court staff said, you know, what do we do when we get a gift from someone who comes in and and wants to thank us? They
right.
can't accept that. It's the rules, right? They, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, when you're in Halifax and someone brings you in a Tim Hortons, it's seen as rude if you don't accept it. So, you know, I put my hand up and I said, well, in Windsor, Ontario, one of the court staff said, we say thank you very much, but we can't accept that. However, if you would like to write us a letter, a note,
right.
we will put that up in our staff lunchroom. And that's become their practice. And something as simple as a practice as that, the Nova Scotia court team was like, oh, okay, that's wonderful. That works for them.
Right.
So, you know, and again, that's a simple, simple example, but that sharing and collaboration, I think, is really starting to overcome the challenges of things being a little bit more isolated and working in, you know, in their own special way.
So does the uniqueness of, let's say, for each province, because they may approach the same kind of justice, i.e. civil or family, differently than the next, with regard to any recommendations or suggestions that you can come up with, would you customize those relative to the uniqueness of the system that you're going to, that you've worked with?
Well, and I, this was, you know, I probably actually, I just took a note down to offer that question to Dr. McFarland, because again, she has the more legal background than myself. But I think, you know, every province and territory does have a bit of a different population, but ultimately you're dealing with people, with human beings. So looking at system changes that really embrace that, you know, you have a guideline, but every one person's going to do that a little bit differently is good, but you still have some regionality that is going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But overall, you know, if things could be done, you know, fairly similar, the sharing and of information and the sharing of best practices happens much easier.
Right. So what is the responsibility greater for? The justice system in helping people who enter into it, or the people in helping themselves when they enter into the justice system?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question. If I could answer that, I would probably be the next prime minister.
Well, you'd be down south in a warmer climate right now.
Oh,
maybe.
I would have many more than one palm tree.
Right, yeah.
Sure. You know, and this is, it's such an interesting question because, you know, in a time where our culture is so do-it-yourself, you know, we all renovate and, you know, we do our taxes online. We're really told that we can do anything. So we do, you know, feel a responsibility to that. And I do believe that as, you know, self-represented litigate, to be educated, to learn, you know, there's great, some of the seminars that the court will run.
Right.
You know, how to write an affidavit, different things that are happening. And as a self-rep, it's your responsibility to go and to learn and be the best self-rep you can be. But also, our justice system is supposed to work in a way that works for the people. So they need to listen to the people and ask the people what they need to make it work.
Right, so there has to be a mutual acknowledgement and recognition, and for people to hear each other and listen and actually be caring to want to do something and actually do something.
Right. We may not always agree, but if we come from a place of respect, if the self-rep walks in with respect for the courtroom and its procedures and the judges, and the judge looks back and has a respect that the self-rep's going through a hard time and is really trying their hardest, which is what we heard overwhelmingly in the research project, is that self-reps are trying to get it right. If those two pieces were come together and that respect was there, that's the place where we begin, I think, and that's the responsibility of both parties.
Yeah. I, from my experience, I don't see a client who comes into the system saying, you know, I know the system so well, I'm just going to beat somebody else up with it and waste their time.
Yeah, I've never heard that either, ever.
No. So how can individuals learn more about the study and or the work that you're currently doing with self-represents?
Well, the most simple way is with access to the internet and our website, which is www.representing-yourself.com. That website has the link to, we have a Facebook account, we have Dr. McFarland's blog, we have Twitter, and also on that website you can find the original research project, the study. We can also find the 10 action steps that came out of that study, which is what we are actually using to move forward this year in the National Self-Represented Litigants Project mandate. We're breaking one down per month, so you can find that. You can find an intake form. So if you are or have been a self-represented litigant in the currently or in the past, and you'd like to be in our confidential database for research in the future or public consultation in the future, you can do that. If you'd like to have someone come out who has been a self-represented litigant and speak to your group about that experience, we have our speakers bank, which is very exciting as well, and we have some great self-reps in there who come out and will talk about their experience in the justice system.
Yeah, and I did print up the 10 action steps from the... There's a monthly newsletter that comes out, too.
Yes, we do. We have our newsletter, and that just came out. It's called Speaking Up, The Voice of the Self-Represented Litigant and Those Who Are Affected by Its Issues.
Mm-hmm. And as part of the one thing before we go, I would encourage as well the utilization of the information referral coordinators as part of a medium to help bridge the self-represented and the system itself, too.
Mm-hmm. We are so lucky to have the FLIC offices and people doing the work they do, because they really are front line and they are the gatekeeper and for so many people into the system, not just procedurally but personally. And it's wonderful.
And briefly, what would you say is important to leave listeners from our conversation today?
Well, I think the most important thing for listeners to do is to really, one, put access to justice on their agenda, to make that matter in their life, and ultimately know that this is a system issue. This is not the fault of the self-reps. This is not the fault of the judges, the lawyers, or the person at the front counter staff. This is a system problem. You know, I go back to a kindergarten rule of, you know, we all play nice. And that's what we, you know, so many people are playing nice, but a system is putting some roadblock away. And that's what we need to do to work together to address the system issues.
I totally agree. Thank you very much for calling in tonight and being with
us. Thank you. I appreciate your time and your staff and that of your listeners.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you, Greg.
All right. You're listening to Mediation Station, and next week we're not going to be on. There's going to be presidential elections. Have a good night. Mom and Daisy.